All right, there's one more thing that I don't know how it got brought up. I'm going to tell you what I heard. I heard on the street that you did it.
I did what?
Pollock's death.
Who's death?
Pollock, that mushroom doctor.
You're listening to a tape recorded in a Texas diner in 1981, which may offer some clues about the unsolved murder of Stephen Pollock. He was a legendary figure in the underground world of psychedelic drugs, the mushroom doctor, mentioned on the tape. Pollock was a brilliant, if renegade, scientist whose murder remains a mystery. When investigative reporter Hamilton Morris recently came across this cassette recording, he thought he might have struck gold.
The tape contains a 44-minute conversation between two people. One is apparently a police officer from the Castle Hills Police Department, which is a city right next to San Antonio, and the other is a self-described burglar whose name is not entirely clear from the tape. But it's kind of a weird secret recording that was made in a restaurant, and the two of them are discussing their involvement in all sorts of different crimes. And then unexpectedly, they start accusing one another of being involved in the murder of this doctor, Stephen Pollock.
They claim that I did it, that I went in and killed him, robbed him and killed him with $200,000 cash and killed him. But I checked around, and I understand that Tommy Lyons had something to do with it, and you had something to do with it, and one other person had something to do with it. And that's street information that I got.
Hamilton Morris wrote an investigative piece about Stephen Pollock for Harper's Magazine. His story isn't just about Pollock's murder. As Anne Strainchamps discovered, it's also a story about a fascinating episode in the history of the psychedelic underground.
Stephen Pollock is a infamous character in the mushroom community. He's one of the pioneers in developing home cultivation techniques for growing psilocybin-containing mushrooms, so psychedelic mushrooms, and also owned a company called Hidden Creek that was a major distributor of mushroom grow supplies. But he's also famous because he was mysteriously murdered, and no one has ever really understood what happened to him.
So you set out to try to figure this out, and along the way you uncovered a whole lot more about Stephen Pollock. It turns out, in some ways, I guess he was way ahead of his time. I mean, he sounds brilliant, obsessed, and convinced that psychedelic mushrooms had medicinal properties?
Yes, absolutely.
And was he coming at this from the counterculture? We're talking back in the 70s, right?
Yes. He was a medical doctor, and he was a classically trained scientist. He wasn't someone where all of his work was dedicated to hallucinogenic drugs. But I think that at some point in his medical training, he tried psilocybin-containing mushrooms and realized that they offered something that no other drug he was familiar with could.
And so by day, he was a mild-mannered microbiologist. By night, he was, growing psilocybin mushrooms in his basement?
Yes. Yeah, but not just in his basement, in his front yard. He had a specifically designed greenhouse that was full of mushrooms. I mean, at the time that his lab was discovered, it was the largest mushroom bust in American history. So he really was very obsessively dedicated to researching and cultivating these mushrooms.
And was psilocybin, or were the mushrooms, illegal then as they are now?
Well, there's some ambiguity in the law regarding psilocybin-containing mushrooms. The isolated chemical psilocybin and its related chemical psilocin are both Schedule I controlled substances in the U.S., but none of the mushrooms themselves are explicitly prohibited, and that was the sort of loophole that he was operating within. So he was using the money that he made from selling the grow kits across the U.S. to fund his research.
And how many of these growing kits was he selling?
It seems like he was actually the number one distributor. You know, they were making, I think, something like $50,000 a month selling these grow kits in the mid-70s.
Now, there's a whole mystique around psilocybin-containing mushrooms, isn't there? In fact, I think you discovered that Dr. Pollock is not the only person to have been murdered over psychoactive mushrooms.
No, he's not. There's a mystique that revolves around psychedelic drugs generally, but yes, specifically with mushrooms. And they have been the subject of all sorts of bizarre theories. People think that they come from outer space, that they represent some alien intelligence that has been sent to Earth to reprogram humans, things like that. And they do seem to inspire a lot of wacky theories.
So in the meantime, he's got this interest in pursuing serious scientific research and medicinal uses for these mushrooms. But in order to fund his research, he kind of walks on the dark side. Didn't he wind up, writing prescriptions for not just psilocybin, quaaludes, all kinds of things?
Yes, yes. He was writing prescriptions for a number of different Schedule II substances. The reason he was doing it was not because he necessarily wanted to be a drug dealer, but because it was a very easy way of raising money to fund his mycological investigations.
And then he was killed. What happened?
And then he was killed. In the winter of 1981, he was kind of spiraling into increasingly deranged and criminal activities. He had started growing a giant field of cannabis, which he had thought he was going to ship across the country in Christmas cookie tins to raise more money. He was not only prescribing all of these Schedule II substances to different addicts in San Antonio, he was also doing things like performing illegal surgeries on people in his kitchen in order to further raise money. And all of this had attracted a lot of negative attention. His license was on the verge of being revoked. The medical board was having a hearing on him just a few days before he was murdered. And his cannabis field had already been discovered by the DEA, who were, you know, involved in all sorts of complicated aerial surveillance operations and things. So he was certainly being watched by multiple government organizations. And he recognized that all this was happening and started to kind of go a little bit crazy. And what exactly happened towards the end is debated by his friends and colleagues. But at least one person suggests that he attempted to kill these police officers who were going to testify against him at a hearing to have his medical license revoked. Whether or not that actually happened is unclear to me. But, you know, whatever the case, he was mysteriously shot in the back of the head in the winter of 1981. And his murder was never solved.
Hmm. So now let's circle back around to this tape, because that's where the story begins. Did the tape shed any light at all on what happened to this guy?
The tape did not directly shed any light on what happened to him. The names in the tape and what is described are provocative, but they don't provide the answers I hoped that the tape would. The tape at its worst will serve as a great piece of evidence for how seriously corrupt the police force was in Texas during that period. That much can be said with certainty, but it does not definitively implicate any police officers in his murder.
Well, but when you, based on this tape, began nosing around to see what you could find out after all this time, did you uncover anything new?
Yes, I did. I started systematically investigating the investigation that was conducted by the police during that period. And there certainly were major problems with the investigation, that is certain. They subpoenaed the phone records for the period of the murder, but never actually obtained them for the relevant days. There were all sorts of provocative pieces of evidence left in the crime scene that were never given the attention they deserved. A bloody towel, a clump of hairs that were found clutched in his hand, and, you know, many, many other strange things, mysterious phone calls. And one problem was that there were so many suspects, because he was really treating hundreds and hundreds of people in San Antonio. And he was simultaneously involved with this criminal underworld and the above-ground medical world.
Well, so in the end, I mean, what conclusions did you come to yourself? Do you think he was the victim of, I don't know, a random drug-based murder? Or do you think he was deliberately knocked off because of his work?
It's unclear to me exactly what happened. I think that there's very strong evidence that three patients of his were responsible for the murder. And the question above that is whether they just committed this as a routine robbery, whether they were just deranged junkies killing him for, you know, whatever money was in his wallet, or whether they in turn were put up by someone higher. You know, there's really no way to answer that question. And all of the people that were suspected of having killed Stephen Pollock are now dead. But there are questions as to why these people were not prosecuted, because there was very robust evidence against them. Their fingerprints were found on the crime scene. They had no alibi. Stephen Pollock's credit card was found on the road to their house, and apparently they had openly not only plotted to kill him before the murder, but bragged about killing him after the murder. But there was very, very strong evidence. You'd think not only evidence strong enough to bring these people to trial, but probably to secure a conviction.
And yet, somehow, mysteriously, they weren't prosecuted?
Yes, they were never prosecuted.
So even after all this time, mystery swirls around the figure of Stephen Pollock. I guess I'm curious about why, in the end, for you, what's the value of telling his story?
Well, I think that it's historically a very unique and interesting story, especially when you consider that right now the current scientific research is very much in agreement with everything that Stephen Pollock believed. Psilocybin isn't the dangerous hallucinogenic drug that the DEA would want you to believe. It seems to be a very promising treatment for OCD, for end-of-life anxiety related to dying of cancer, even for things like smoking cessation. So there are very broad applications for psilocybin and other psychedelic drugs. And I think that through looking at his story, you can learn about the way these people are silenced for having unpopular ideas.
Investigative reporter Hamilton Morris talking with Anne Strangchamps. You'll find a link to his Harper's Magazine story about Stephen Pollock on our website at ttbook.org.